Hello, welcome back. It's great to have you. This is the 43rd episode of the Bhagavad Gita in the series entitled The Gita Decoded. And we're now going to take up Chapter 12, The Yoga of Devotion. Chapter 12, The Yoga of Devotion. Sister Denise has been with us this entire series, sharing her understanding, her experience, and her immense spiritual wisdom into what is contained in this ancient text. And on your behalf, I bid her a very warm welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Sister Denise, chapter 12 begins by God explaining to Arjuna who he considers to be the most loyal and devoted to him. And I'd like to take you through to verse 2. Where it reads, the Blessed Lord spoke, those who are eternally steadfast, who worship me, fixing their minds on me, endowed with supreme faith, I consider them to be the most devoted to me. Now, this is not news to the reader because we have heard this in the previous chapters. But the impression that I get, Sister Denise, is God is saying to Arjuna, and the vision that I have is that he's holding him by both shoulders and saying to him, son, I cannot emphasize this enough. Okay? Do you hear what I'm saying to you? That is the reason for the repetition. What is your take on this?
I think so. And I think also that the overwhelming majority of people who relate to God relate in a devotional way. That means they're not trying to understand or grasp or whatever. They just want to hold steady and spend their whole life remembering God, doing acts of devotion in faith that this is what will bring them close to God. And I think it's very compassionate on the part of God to make himself absolutely open and available, and also to give so much importance to the one who loves him. Because devotion means love. I love God. I don't quite understand him, but it doesn't matter. I just love him. And that's enough. That's good enough.
So no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what your karma is, no matter how deep your pain, how happy you may be, wherever you are at, irrespective of your past, irrespective of your baggage, the message is just be with me.
Yeah, the idea of holding steadfast is to be able to just leave aside everything that's happening and just continue to remember God no matter what, because this is going to carry you to your destination.
Sister Denise, you know, from a very practical level, okay, those who are eternally steadfast, eternity is a very long time. Okay, does that mean there's nothing else but God in one's life? And the reason I'm asking this is on a practical level. We have to wake up in the morning. We have to attend to our needs. We eat breakfast. We get dressed. We go to work if you're employed. We drop off the children at school. We go live a life. We go shopping. We visit friends. We engage with family. And there's all of these things and that we do because we're human. And then now we hear this line that says, who are eternally steadfast. How do you do both?
If you think about the people, especially the elderly people, they're not working anymore. They don't have any responsibilities. They've slowed down because of age, and there are a lot of people, okay, they wake up in the morning, and part of their, all of their daily routine is involved in devotional activities. You know, many people, they will take their bath and immediately go into their prayers, and Hinduism has very rich, complex rituals, and so a person can be engaged in rituals all day long, and you see that especially among the elderly. And it's not just confined to Hinduism. You will see this in Catholicism very much, and I think across the board. And this is something that you see more in the elderly. We saw in an earlier part of the Gita that preparation for death is very important. So people, as they become elderly, they become aware, you know, the next big thing that's going to happen to me is I will be transitioning from this birth to another birth, or from here on earth to God. Either way, it's the same preparation.
I'd now like to take you through to verse 3, which reads, "But those who honor the imperishable, the indefinable, the unmanifest, the all-pervading and unthinkable, the unchanging, the immovable, the eternal, controlling all the senses, even-minded on all sides, rejoicing in the welfare of all creatures, they also attain me." Could you take us through that?
Well, this is really yoga, isn't it? You want to actually practice meditation, communing with God, trying to be in union with God. And the last part of it includes the idea of being philanthropic, you see. Because one very important thing is that if the actions you do are for the benefit of others, this is good karma. And if you have bad karma, it blocks your ability to commune with God. So if you're communing with God and you're doing good karma for the benefit of others, service, you know, this is going to help you to hold steady in that communion. So to be united with God in thought, that's very good, but it's not so easy because you have to be undistracted. So this is why I think this happens more towards the end of a person's life when they've done everything they had to do, you know. You don't see very young people normally doing this. They're more busy trying to get their life together.
Could you give us a practical example of being even-minded on all sides? That is a very curious expression.
I think it refers to the fact that there you are, you're a devotional person, but you're in the world and there's all sorts of things going on around you, but you are practicing to withdraw from your engagement with the world, and you're practicing to be dispassionate about the good, the bad, the ups and downs and so on, because unless you have that flame of your mind steady, unmoving, you can't really go to God, because God is very subtle.
Yes, so Denise, could you please explain the words contained in verse 5? "The trouble of those whose minds are fixed on the unmanifest is greater, for the goal of the unmanifest is attained with difficulty by embodied beings." By embodied beings, which is us, isn't it?
Us.
Yeah.
We have body consciousness and we have soul consciousness, two different kinds of consciousness. And what we learn in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga is that unless you take the time to bring yourself into the soul conscious stage, you will not be able to hold your mind steady on the being of God. So we give a lot of importance to that. You see, as long as you're in body consciousness, you're not going to be able to connect with God, because you're on the material level and God is on the level of spirit. So I think that's what it's about.
Verse 6. "But those who, renouncing all actions in me and regarding me as the supreme, worship me, meditating on me with undistracted yoga." Please tell us what the difference is between focusing one's mind on God, one's intellect on God, then perform actions for the sake of God. Those three things come up.
The mind is very subtle, very wavering. The intellect is the muscle that you use to hold the mind, because it's the mind that will connect with God, and the intellect will hold the mind. And then you're able to experience and receive. Now, what is said in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga is, perform your actions in remembrance of God, which means that you're creating your karma with God rather than with people, places, and things. So you want to be with God, you have to do karma, so you're soul conscious, you're doing the actions in remembrance of God according to the directions of God, and then you will be able to stay connected in meditation. This is how we practice.
It's a very sweet message, isn't it?
I think, again, it leads you to being able to come to God, as was mentioned in the end of the previous chapter.
Sister Denise, the question that I asked you, that I read from chapter 7, is also contained in further chapters 8, 9, 10, and it's the various ways one can focus and include God in one's life. I'd now like to take you to verse 11, which reads, "But if you are unable even to do this, then resorting to devotion to me and abandoning all fruits of action, act with self-restraint." Now, we've heard this term before in the previous chapters, and yet it is re-emphasized. That is the image that we first see Krishna and Arjuna with, don't we? There's horses, there's Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot, and the reins are being held. Okay? Sister Denise, do you think in what we've become in today's age, we no longer holding on to the reins of our, I assume, senses and personality as we should?
I think this is really what it's all about, that act with restraint means you're not acting impulsively, you're not reacting, but you're being absolutely proactive. So the reason why you do something is because it's a good action, not because of a feeling or a reaction or under provocation, something like this. Because when you act in those ways, you come into karmic accounts and not with God. If you can restrain your response to your perceptions and then operate on the basis of your understanding of what's right, which you understand through your conscience, through your intellect, then you stay with God.
Self-restraint is an extremely important leg of spiritual conduct, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and it seems the message that I receive from this is that if you do not have some measure of self-restraint, then you cannot, you're closing the door between yourself and God. Is that an important part?
Well, the thing is, there's this force of negativity that you have to contend with.
Yes.
And it's a real thing. So if
that's,
you...
Sorry, that's also part of the war, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
The internal war.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got the force of negativity that arises in you, and?
So you have your wish to be communing with God. The job of the force of negativity is to break that, you see. So you could get frustrated, you could get irritated, all sorts of emotions arise. And when you're under the influence of an emotion, which can easily be triggered by anything, then you've lost it. So self-restraint is a very good discipline, because whenever some energy comes along to disturb you and distract you, because of your practice of self-restraint, you can hold yourself where you want to be, and it will not be able to move you away.
Mr. Denise, I have to ask you this question in this context because I think it's relevant. In the previous chapters, we discussed subdue the self, and I asked you about the dangers of suppression and repression. Could you explain the difference between self-restraint and suppressing?
I would probably take you to being a rider of a horse. You know, if you are harsh with the horse and you hold the horse by force, you know, he's not going to be happy and you're not going to be considered a good rider. The good rider is the one who lets the horse know who's in charge, and with a slight signal, a slight movement of the legs or feet or the shifting of your weight, the horse knows exactly what you want to do. So you become one with the horse. You see what I mean? And so self-restraint is more like that, and you don't want to apply force on your very subtle organs of perception, your mind, your sanskaras, your intellect.
Okay, so to take your analogy further, the one who is in charge, I assume you mean the intellect is in charge.
Well, the self through the intellect, yeah.
Is in charge, and the mind, in your example, is the horse.
The horse, yes.
So it's necessary that that the intellect is always in charge of the mind.
Well,
not as in charge as in thou shalt do as I say, but effectively controlling the mind and not the other way around.
Absolutely. And in fact, Raj Yoga has sometimes been called yoga of the intellect. Mm. So where the intellect is really strong and it has this power of commanding rather than demanding.
You see, this takes years of work, doesn't it?
Well, it depends on the individual, but the work, you know, serious inner work, serious spiritual work, generally we say it's a lifetime process because there's always room for improvement.
Yeah. Sister Denise, I know some people were born calm and serene, but you can count them in the fingers of one hand. Most of us have things like impatience and tempers and, you know, flares of negativity and dark traits. And so a strong internal hand is needed. But what you're saying, it has to be appropriately strong and not inappropriately strong.
Yes, it mustn't be tyrannical. Mm. It mustn't be forceful. It has to be strong, but strong isn't violent.
Okay, that is a very powerful message. Strong isn't violent. Okay, we'll chat more about that in forthcoming episodes. Sister Denise, from the next verse until almost the end of this chapter, a picture of a very balanced individual is being painted. Okay, and it's words that we've heard before in previous chapters. He who neither rejoices nor hates, alike towards enemy and friend, indifferent to blame and praise. I'm just picking up lines from each of these verses. And the last verse reads, those who honor this immortal law described above, endowed with faith, devoted and intent on me as the supreme, they are exceedingly dear to me. Heart.
Absolutely.
Heart.
Yes. And you see, he's describing the kind of person that anyone would consider very, very highly in the world. You know, you really look up to somebody who has all of these qualities. And this is not a dependent type of person. This is not an emotionally unstable type of person. This is really the ideal person. And such a person who is focused on God, you know, this is the best kind of person you could have, you see? And this is why I think that in general, if you could be considered as a spiritual person, people will trust you because you have all of the qualities of equilibrium and goodness and purity and all of this. So it's a very, very beautiful picture to present to any human being. Become like this and be near to God, and that's it. That's all you have to do.
I was amused at what is contained in verse 15. He from whom the world does not shrink, and who does not shrink from the world, who is freed from joy, envy, fear, and distress, is dear to me. Those first two lines are brought a smile to my lips, as it were, because to some, spirituality or the practice of religion is a copping out, is an escapism. You know, you don't have anything, you can't get it together with human beings, so you find God, as it were. And this, the opposite is stated in verse 15, isn't it? This is very clear.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, the person that you described is not really spiritual.
No.
It's all about avoidance, and you can say, oh, well, I'm into my spirituality and therefore I can't, you know, get it together, but that's doesn't prove it. What really proves your spirituality is that you're able to engage with the world very well, and the world really loves you, but you're not, you know, sustaining yourself from the world and just drawing energy. You know, the energy vampire? People who just take energy from other people or whatever.
That's a scary image, yes.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people who get called that because they're unable to draw their energy from God.
Mm.
They take it from people, places, and things. And so they're rapacious in that respect. But the person who is with God and very comfortable with people, and people are comfortable with them, what else can you want in a person? That is really nice.
Rapacious. I like that word, rapacious. Okay, so Sister Denise, a very clear profile has been drawn of those that God considers to be his nearest and dearest. And this is a yardstick that we could use to measure our own personality.
Yes.
And it's somebody who's balanced. Balanced. And I think that's one of the worst negative traits we have in today's world. We tend to be too much on one side and not enough on the other. I mean, there have been studies done recently to show that a shocking amount of time is spent on cellular phones and the internet to the exclusion of the people whom you live with and people whom you interact with.
Yeah, this is what we see in the world today. Too much.
So balance brings one closer to God. That is the message, isn't it?
Yeah. In Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, we hear about a balance of knowledge and yoga, a balance of yoga and service. You have to balance taking care of your inner world with interacting with other people. And a person who is balanced, they can sustain that lifestyle pretty much indefinitely. But as long as you go to extremes, at some point it's not going to work. So you're going to have to re-establish a balance and, in a sense, start again from zero, and unless there is attention to balance.
Okay, Sister Denise, is there any last words that you would like to leave with the audience before we say goodbye to you today?
I think that everyone should really think about this chapter, because it's such a beautiful description of a really good quality person. It gives you a very lovely way to try to design your life, design yourself, your character, in the knowledge that this is really what God likes. And sometimes people are concerned, okay, what am I supposed to be? What does God expect of me? Well, here it is, beautifully spelled out. Just be like this and know that God will love you and everyone will love you.
Well, nothing much more for me to say, is there? Except goodbye. But before I say goodbye to you, Thank you, Sister Denise. That was very sweet and very empowering. I hope that you were able to feel God's love in this chapter. I know I certainly did. Practically at the end of each verse in this chapter, toward the end of this chapter, we hear the words, "They are exceedingly dear to me." So if you've ever asked yourself the question, what type of person should I be, irrespective of what I've become before today, what do I want to be, who do I want to be, the message contained in this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is of a very balanced individual who lives life in this world and also has God in his heart and mind. And Sister Denise has given us very clear answers to questions that we may have had into the nitty-gritty of this chapter. And I hope all your personal questions have been answered in the course of this show and previous shows. Thank you so much for joining us, and I do hope to see you for the next chapter, which is chapter 13. Thank you, Sister Denise. Always great to have you, and thank you for joining us. Until the next time, goodbye.